me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame, for it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Welcome to Let's Get To, the baseball podcast from the fans' perspective. Now here's your host, James Christopher.
Old bobble, bobble. And welcome to Let's Get To. I'm James Christopher, playing with my bobbleheads on what is one of my last few days of summer before we go back to school. But we have a great episode for you today. We're going to be talking to the O'Fallon Hoots. They are a team in the Prospect League outside of St. Louis. And Scott McIntyre and I will be up there this weekend to check out their pod that they've got going. We're going to be talking to a ball player who played for the Bismarck Bull Moose this past summer. And then Scott's here, Stu's here, and Andy's here to kind of continue to break down what Major League Baseball looks like thus far. But I wanted to talk a little bit about an issue that really drove the show for a while, but we haven't really discussed much because, frankly, there hasn't been much to discuss, and that is the contraction of the MILB. Baseball America has a couple of great articles out. I highly recommend checking it out if you are interested in this subject. And if you're a fan of baseball, even if you are, you know, guys like The Hitter who live in New York City and are so involved in their Yankees, if you're a baseball fan, you need to care about this story. We've talked ad nauseum about how important minor league baseball and affiliated minor league baseball is to growing this game, a game that, despite the TV revenue, is losing fans. Those are realities that we have to face. So there has been some movement, I guess, on the negotiation of the PBA between Major League Baseball and affiliated minor league baseball, the MILB. The MILB has replaced their negotiating team, which, you know, I don't know enough about who was out and now who is in to find out if this is a good thing or not. I know that they've made a series of proposals, informal as they are, because they've had no formal talks since April, that seem to be non-starters for MLB. Now, we've heard non-starters from MLB before with their negotiations with the players and COVID. So I'm guessing they're taking the same approach of saying, here are our demands, meet them or don't, which is always super helpful in a conversation that I think encapsulates more than most people think. One of the troubling things about this new negotiating team that the MILB has put out is that apparently doesn't speak for all of the owners. And I can understand that to a degree. These are 160 small businesses. It's going to be impossible to find someone that can speak for all of their needs, as their needs are different. I'm pretty much resigned to the fact that 40 teams are going to go. I think a lot of people put up a lot of valiant fights. Congress people, mayors, team owners, and people on social media, like our friend at savemilb.org. Like, people have put forth the fight, but they ran into a lot of bad luck, and that bad luck really came in the form of the coronavirus. And I understand that the coronavirus is about lives being lost and all of those things, the economy contracting, and understand that just because I talk about baseball doesn't mean I don't think that those things are awful or I care, but this is the show. These are 160 small businesses for the most part that are dealing with their own stuff as a result of COVID. They've lost sponsors. They haven't been able to have games. They are in a lot of trouble, and I've resigned myself that is going to be kind of the death rattle for a lot of them with this contraction thing coming. Now, MLB has a lot of demands, and I don't even necessarily disagree with all of them. Look, if you're going to draft a player and pay a player, you should be able to expect good conditions for player development, good conditions for them to play in where they stay healthy. You should be able to demand all of those things. I don't know that they weren't getting them from the affiliated MILB as often as they say that, but that's a show for another day. I just really hope that fans of the game of baseball, speak up, use their voice, and recognize that we need these teams and we need this level of baseball. And I would say this, and I saw a tweet, and I'm going to attribute it to SaveMILB.org, although I don't remember if it was him or not, who brought up the question of, Manfred can't run 30 teams. Why is he supposed to be able to run 150? And this is in response to his one baseball thing. And now the one thing I'm hoping is that MILB is able to remain its autonomy. What I mean by that is that Major League Baseball wants to take control of the front office. They want to move it to New York. They want to homogenize everything. And I think the reason that minor league baseball is successful, the reason people care, is because of what's in front of me, what's behind me, and the fact that they are different and they are culturally reactive and they reflect the communities they play in. So it doesn't look great. Hopefully we'll have more news. We are 54 days from this. The deadline of when the PBA expires. Again, no formal talk since April. My fear is that Major League Baseball is going to let it expire and there will be a wild, wild west happening with affiliates. And it'll be short-term good for Major League Baseball owners, I guess, but I think it'll be a long-term detriment to the game. So definitely check out the Baseball America articles there. They have this thing covered like nobody else. Keep checking them out. Follow them on Twitter. But again, stay with us. We have a great show for you.
Oppo Taco, a fan's view of the show. Brought to you by Marco Fine Arts.
All right, so we are on the Oppo Taco, and we're going to be talking to the guy bringing it down for the rest of this season, Stu Clary. Stu, first of all, I saw on social media, happy anniversary.
Thank you. 30 years of marriage, 33 together. Yeah, we've beat the odds for sure.
Absolutely. We hit, Jessica and I hit 20 next month. So we're
beat the odds as well. Good for you. Did.
So speaking of beating the odds, I don't know how that's a transition or not, or a segue. So we had our first 7-inning doubleheader in baseball yesterday. The Yankees and Phillies, I think, split. What are your thoughts about the 7-inning doubleheader?
At first, I thought I was going to hate it. I like it. I think it's cool. I remember when we were kids, they would regularly schedule doubleheaders, and I loved going to doubleheaders. But if we play 7-inning doubleheaders, I think that's a lot of baseball. I'm not usually one for change, especially with baseball, but – it hasn't been terrible, so I don't mind the 7-inning doubleheader.
Yeah, it's interesting because I do a lot of MILB and a lot of other stuff, and that is the norm. Anytime there is a doubleheader, in fact, it's a 7-inninger. Part of me wonders if we're going to get a real sample size of who is or who isn't the best team because of that. However, I think this season everything's out the window anyway, right?
Everything's out the window. Everything is going to be experimental and weird and wacky and I think kind of fun. I think the 7-inning doubleheader, what it does is maybe it eliminates two middle relief innings. I'm a high school baseball coach where we play 7-inning games. And usually what our modus operandi is we go as far as we can with our starting pitcher and then we have a kid, if we need to close out a game, we bring in a kid for 3, 4, 5, 6 outs. And that might be what we'll see with the doubleheaders. I don't really have that big of a problem with it.
Well, you talked about baseball getting wacky this year. A lot of people started out hating the runner on second and extras and then transitioned into loving the runner on second and extras. I'm of a weird mind of it. I think in the moment, it makes it automatically excited, but at a macro for baseball, I kind of hate it.
I find it very, very interesting because I wonder what strategies will evolve. There was a lot of talk of, do you bunt the guy to third? I personally don't think that's a good strategy, especially if you're the visitors. You want to try and get as many runs as you can, and you get runs by not making outs. But if you're the home team and the visitors don't score, now again, do you bunt that guy to third? Again, I don't think you do because unless you have a really weak hitter at the plate, I'd rather take my shot at three shots at a base hit versus, you know, possibly a sack fly or a wild pitch or a base hit and only have two chances to do that. So I think it's added an element of excitement. Count me among the people that are not hating it.
One of the things I thought was interesting, what you just said, and Dusty Baker talked about this yesterday for our Astro stuff. The thing that people don't, that bunk guy is never doing is looking far down the lineup. So if somebody bumps somebody over and Chapman comes up and the guy behind Chapman's weak, well, they're just going to walk Chapman. And now you've got a double play set up. Like, it is where Chapman's a good enough hitter. He can hit a sack fly and move the guy over if he doesn't hit it out of the park.
I think with some teams, you'll be able to do more intentional walking because, you know, obviously lineups that aren't as deep, you can, if Trout's coming up, let's just put him on. Mm-hmm. And they just had the other day, the first intentional walk to a leadoff man since Barry Bonds. I don't remember who that was.
It was the Astros' Kyle Tucker.
There you go. And did that strategy work or did it not work?
I do. In that inning, I do believe it worked. I think the Astros won the game, but I don't think it hurt them there.
Gotcha. So beautiful, beautiful. One thing that National League fans have lamented about the designated hitter is it takes away its strategy, which – I didn't pay my ticket to see a, you know, 65-year-old guy make a double switch. However, this at least adds some element of strategy.
Absolutely. And I think you're right. I think, yeah, I'm here for Astro for Dusty Baker's post-game comments because it's like listening to your grandfather tell a story, but I'm not interested to see him double switching and all that fun stuff. One of the things I wanted to – I don't know how much the Athletics have been affected by this, but I think if we were to do a word cloud for 2020, Tommy John would be one of the most talked about words. The Astros have two that are likely to get it. The Yankees have a guy. Did the union and the players really not consider just how many injuries would come from such a slow ramp up?
Are we seeing more injuries really, or are we seeing a rash right now? And is it the normal number of injuries that we would be seeing in any normal baseball season? That's the question I have. I don't know. And I just have to wonder. I mean, I'm hoping that Verlander does not need a Tommy John surgery, but I mean, this is a guy that's beaten the odds for quite a few years. The simple act of throwing a baseball is so violent that I don't know what the surgery rate is per pitcher, but it's probably well over 75%. I would get not TJS, but the guys get hurt by throwing baseballs. So I'd rather not think about Tommy John surgeries. I mean, the A's have had their share over the past 5-6 years, and I'm looking for something around me that's wooden that I could knock on, right? Or that, right, right. I just wonder if we're seeing more because of the quick ramp up, or is it just a normal? Is it just normal, but
So we had some stats on this week's episode where right now there is a higher percentage of pitchers on the IL than at any other point at this point in a season. When you factor in being 9-10 games in.
Very, very interesting.
So, you know, as we go forward then, I don't know if you saw this yet. I know that it's still early on the West Coast, but there are now a new level of protocol being put out for how teams have to behave. You know, it seems like teams that were in contention, I assume the Athletics, the Yankees, I know the Astros have been very, very good about what they do on the road. Like, basically every player in their own hotel room until the bus picks them up for the park. We've heard stories about the Marlins out at clubs. Do you think that the season gets finished? And do you think that
definitely gets finished? And I think that because there's so much money to be made, the owners, I mean, they're paying less salary. They've got a minimum number of games. They've got this all figured out. It's a big math problem. They're definitely going to finish. And if they have to finish by pulling, you know, guys off the street, they're going to do that. I mean, look, they really should have forfeited those Marlins games, and in my opinion. But they're going to play them all. They're definitely going to finish. And I think teams are being smarter because of what's happened with the Cardinals and Marlins, that the effect was other teams. Now, I noticed, you know, night before last, the A's won on a walk-off home run, and the celebration was very, very benign. I've noticed a lot more masks, at least watching the A's games. So, and they've been really good. They have several players that are at risk that are playing, and I think everyone is kind of has a heightened awareness now.
Yeah, I thought it was one of the things that I thought was kind of cool was the weekend in the Astros Angels season. All of them have the net gaiters. Anytime somebody gets on first, they just pull it up. And, you know, it's such a weird thing. And I guess my last question for you is watching a game with no fans, watching a game with no, I mean, the A's are known for the drums and all that stuff. Has it changed the watching experience for you?
It's only changed the watching experience for me in that I'm not going to the games. I've watched all the games on TV. When I haven't been able to, I've listened to them on my phone. That's the only experience that I've missed out on is going to the games, tailgating, enjoying games, seeing people that I see at the games, forearm bashing after home runs in the stands. That's what I've missed. Having a dog and a brew in the stands is what I've missed. Still watching the games. I don't know how – I'd like to know how the Astros and other teams have done it, but the piped-in crowd noise has actually been pretty good on the A's telecasts. And it's funny because I do find myself listening to fan reaction, like, how well was that ball hit? And then I realized that's just all kind of – it's all artificial. So old habits, you know, that are 55 years in the making are hard to break. But – all in all, I mean, I'm enjoying the games on TV. I'm just so happy that baseball is back and they're playing games. And, well, you know, in the last week or so, the A's have been playing pretty well, too.
They're playing good baseball. And I think now 538, of course, those projections are so – 538 has them projected to win the division by a game. So, yeah, they definitely are.
Projections and prospects, you know.
On deck, the Let's Get To interview, brought to you by Fine Line Sportswear.
So we're excited to welcome to our On Deck segment, our interview of the episode, Mr. Larson Fontenot. He is a ball player from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, that we ended up running into in Bismarck, North Dakota. First of all, Larson, how's it going, man?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Doing okay. I'm a big Astros fan, and I made a point of watching the fourth inning last night. That was rough.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm the Astros too.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Dusty. At some point, he just doesn't have it, right? Exactly. I want to talk to you a little bit, though, man. How did you decide that you wanted to be a ball player? Like growing up, who were some of the players you liked watching growing up, and how did you end up finding the sport?
Growing up, I really loved Andrew McCutchen. He was just a great outfielder, and I looked up to him. Mike Trout also. Just growing up, you know, I just played ball my whole life. I also played football and soccer, and just decided in high school that baseball would be the best bet. So I just went with that.
So you're playing college ball. Where do you play?
I play at Northwestern State, which is in Natchitoches, Louisiana. Okay. It's like 3 hours from Baton Rouge.
So then you end up playing in Bismarck, North Dakota. How did that come about?
So I was playing in Traverse City. I was there first, and then due to the COVID, five of our guys ended up having it. So the head coach for the Bull Moose was Mitchell Gallagher, and he coached me last year in Kokomo, which is another Northwoods League team. And I called him up and said, "Yeah, we actually need an outfielder." So I drove from Michigan there, end up in Bismarck, and it was a great time. You know, they handled it very well. With the COVID testing and all that, being there just felt like, you know, it felt like a pandemic wasn't even going on. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah. We were up there for the doubleheader, and that's why I was shocked when I came across you on Twitter, because, you know, you're obviously from Louisiana. We ended up having somebody who works for the Larks on the team, who's from Dallas. And I'm just like, how did we all end up in North Dakota?
Exactly. Yeah.
I was impressed with the crowds that they had out there. What was your fan experience like playing in front of them?
It's a little different compared to last year, but it's pretty amazing to see compared, like, just with everything going on in the world, how they can allow people in the stadium, like the MLB, like nobody's allowed.
Yeah.
So it's pretty awesome to see that, like, they fever check you and they tell you if you're not feeling good, don't come to the game or whatever. But I think it's pretty awesome the amount they can have there.
So, you know, talk to me through the process then. So you're getting ready to, you know, you've started a college season. How many games did you get in before the shutdown?
I think about 16, I think.
Okay. All of a sudden there's no baseball. What's going, like, where are you in your career? What year are you in? Like, I know, you know, you're getting to the point where time's going to run out.
I'm actually going to be a senior in the class, but I'll be a junior on the field due to COVID. But so I'll have an extra year of eligibility, which is pretty cool. So if the draft doesn't happen this year, I'll decide to play the next year or not. But I'm pretty set on playing my extra year.
Okay, so then you get shut down, and then it looks like everything's shut down. And then you said Traverse City, the Pitch Bitters, which is one of the best, first of all, looking brands in baseball, I think.
It's amazing up there.
But then you go up there and you find out, well, first of all, let me talk to me a little bit about hearing that the Pitch Bitters were going to happen. What was that like for you, the emotional change of no baseball to some baseball?
Oh, it was amazing. Like going into it, I was supposed to play in Kokomo again. And we didn't know that these pods were going to happen or whatever. And so our coach texted us and was like, hey, still don't know like when we're going to start. It's probably not going to be in May. So then he texted us saying, hey, we're going to be playing in Traverse City. It's going to be a 3-team pod. So that's when I was pretty excited about that. You know, I get to play more ball. You know, I haven't played since like the beginning of March, something like that. So it was pretty awesome to hear. You know, I get to play ball. I was kind of excited. You know, usually going to summer ball, you're not really excited to play because you just played a full season.
Right.
But now I was really excited. I was like, hey, let's go.
So then all of a sudden, because they had to pause for like 2 weeks. You make the move to the Bull Moose. It just feels like you keep running into walls and then you end up finding a new way to play.
Yeah, I didn't. So our options in Michigan were either go home or quarantine there for 2 weeks. And I just felt like quarantine for 2 weeks was just a waste of time because I tested negative. So I'm like, I'm trying to play ball somewhere. So I called up Mitch and he's like, yeah, if you can come here tomorrow, we can test you. And then once you're negative, you can start playing with us. I was like a plan. So I drove there, had a great time in Bismarck. It's amazing. You know, just awesome to see.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I wanted to like, so one of the things for those people listening out there that they did a thing, I know the Bull Moose did it a couple times when I was up there, the whole Lion King thing with the baby.
Oh yeah.
Like, so when, as a player, you know, and that's a big part of minor league baseball and collegiate summer league and indie ball is that kind of fan interaction. As a player, do you think it's cool or are you just like, man, I just want to play? Like,
First day, I mean, I was like, whoa, I don't know what this is. And we always did it. I thought it was amazing just for the fans to be there, you know, enjoy their time there, especially for the young one that was the one becoming whatever mascot it was. It was awesome to see, you know, put a smile on their face, let them have a good time. I think it was just amazing.
And so now you guys have just wrapped up, right? You made your way back to Louisiana already?
Yes, sir. I'm actually in Texas with my fiance. But I would play longer if I could, but our school starts the 17th of August and I think it goes through the September, something like that, that pod.
Oh, great.
So most of the guys left when I left because, I mean, we have to go a week early to get COVID tested. So,
okay. And so, yeah, I mean, I guess, you guys will start winter ball in at Northwestern. When will that start?
I really don't know yet, but I've heard that we're going to be working out in like groups, you know, groups of like 4 or 6. And then we have to wear masks, I think, when we work out. Practices, I don't know yet, but I'm sure I'll know more when I get up there. But I'm just excited to get back and see my boys.
Yeah, I bet. So you get any chance to watch any MLB while you're hanging out?
Yes, sir. So the opening day, we had an off day. So that was awesome. Just watched every game I could, you know, just. It's pretty awesome to see. Finally gets to watch some sports.
It feels so weird though, right? Like,
oh, I know
how loud the bat, like,
like I'm pretty good at judging off the sound, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's gone. Nope, that's a routine fly ball to center.
Yeah, it's pretty cool though. Also with like the fake fans noises, feel like there's people there, and you look around, there's nobody yeah. there. Like it's
awesome. I've done a pretty yeah. I think they've done a really good job of editing that stuff mm-hmm. in and being creative in a time when, you know, this was. I was really looking forward to this season, and now it's like all the injuries and stuff. It's been rough. But you said you're an Astros fan?
Yes, sir, I am.
How do you see them finishing up the rest of the year? So many pitching injuries.
Oh, I know. Pitching wise, they're going downhill. But I mean, hopefully, they can get back in or not. Pretty big loss with what's his name, Verlander.
Yeah,
pretty big loss, but. I've heard it was fake about he'd be out the whole year. I think it's so hopefully he comes back soon. Other than that, though, I think our sticks are fine. We're swinging it pretty good.
Yeah. Except for that 9-run fourth inning last night. Now, yeah, you said, and I'm going to give you an opportunity to win like fiance of the year. You said you're
yes,
got engaged. Tell me a little bit about your fiance.
Yeah, she's from the Woodlands, Texas, which is a little bit north of Houston. Mm-hmm. Kind of, her freshman year, she went to Cincinnati and then transferred to Northwestern State. And that's where we met, started dating or whatever, you know, gave it about a year or two and then proposed to her. I just knew she was the one. You just had that feeling like you've been through so many girls, like she's awesome and she's the one. So yeah, I mean, it's just, so I'm with her right now and, we're actually about to go to a lake, just have some fun there.
Good.
A little fun before I go back to school, you know?
Go, go Astros, a focus on H-Town hardball.
We're on for what can only be described as an emergency episode edition of Go, go Astros. Andy, how are you?
Are you trying to tell me that a 9.22 ERA is bad?
Yeah, it's not great, man. You know, you and I have, I think, been pretty open about Lance McCullers for his entire career with Houston. He is capable of 37 straight curveballs in the ALCS and being untouchable. Talk about who knew which pitches were coming, but doesn't matter. But he's also capable of having a 5-cent head.
Yeah, my perception of him, and I think other people have said this as well, so I don't know how original a thought it is, but he's fine up until anything goes wrong. And I mean anything. The lace on his cleat comes undone. The wind blows his hair the wrong way. But once that thing happens bad, the rest, you might as well write him off for the rest, at least that inning. Sometimes he handles it better than others. Last night was an example of him handling it not as well as he's handled some other things. You have a fluke inside the park home run that was and the Astros have been the victims of some balls hit perfectly to right field in the last 6 months that have just destroyed some things. We'll go into Howie Kendrick right now, but that ball last night that was hit to right field did the same thing. It bounced off the fence, rolled back to center field. Springer misplayed it. We found out part of why people don't look at the center fielder at that time as a viable everyday center fielder, because he's got a noodle arm, to the point that he had to wait for Springer to get back to the ball to throw it in. But that snowballed. That could have been 4-2. It could have been 4-4. Instead, he gives up 9 runs in an inning or 8 runs in an inning. And completely melts down, just throwing meatballs. It wasn't that the Diamondbacks hitters were so good last night. It's that he gave them no choice but to hit it and hit it hard.
Yeah, you know, there's going to be a lot of talk about whether or not a team should be able to open the roof mid-game. But I think that's an excuse. I think he had 2 unlucky swings of the bats. I think the inside the park home run. And I do think the golf shot is probably a foul ball, a fly ball routinely with the roof closed, but that's not material. He had no swing and miss on his curveball last night.
Right. Well, I hate the roof talk open, and I hate it because our home team plays at Minute Maid Park. And so during the first season, the inaugural season, when it was 10 run field, they used to open the roof up after the 7th inning. During the 7th inning stretch, and offense would be more explosive from both sides of the dugouts, both teams, when they did that, to the point that they don't do it anymore. And that actually, up until this year, I was under the impression it was a rule that whatever the, unless it's raining, if you start with the roof closed, it stays closed. If you start with it open, it stays open. We saw that in the 2005 World Series because Selig demanded the roofs be open, and the only way it would close during a game is if it started raining. Evidently, that's changed, or the Diamondbacks thought they could do whatever they want. And I hate that we're even talking about it because it doesn't excuse the fact that McCullers has been in the major leagues since 2016 and needs to learn how to pitch out of trouble. And he, not 2018 notwithstanding, when he did a better job of it, this has been kind of a hallmark of his career, is that when something goes bad, everything goes bad.
And it couldn't have been a worse time for it, about to play something like, what, 16 straight games. This right. was a game where Dusty, and I think that is why Dusty tried to leave him in as long as he could to save somewhat of that bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to have to take his next turn in the rotation. I mean, there's, barring an injury, there's not another choice. They've moved Josh James out of the rotation. Bielak's going to start tonight. Greinke's starting in Oakland. Those are your five right now, and the only help on the horizon might be Jose Urquidy, which he's a competent pitcher and certainly looked better last year than McCullers looked last night. But that's all that's on the horizon right now, barring Verlander not really being hurt as bad as we all think he is. So McCullers has to get better, or he's going to find himself without a job. And it's almost to the point where, you know, we were talking about it, and I know it's been brought up before. I'm kind of wondering if his future in Major League Baseball is in a bullpen, because he's got incredible stuff. And if he can manage through one inning, maybe he's a top-end closer, which the Astros are going to need now. But he's not somebody throughout his history, other than one season, that you can rely on to take the ball every fifth day, have a good start, eat six innings, and then turn it over to the bullpen. He's just not, and he's certainly not that guy now. I'm hoping it's just rust. I'm hoping it's because he hasn't really pitched since October of 2018. But the reality is his history was a lot closer to what we saw last night prior to 2018 than it's not.
With James moving to the bullpen, I mean, Urquidy's going to come in and basically probably take what is Bielak's spot right now. I mean, McCullers is going to be the guy for 2020 unless James Click makes a move.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where they are. The Astros, you know, the good news is you're having a lot of exposure. You're going to really find out what your prospects look like because we're playing all of Fayetteville's pitching roster from last year in the major leagues this year. It's
Fayetteville.
And they're what, single A?
They are high A, yeah.
Yeah, so they're all pitching for Houston this year on the Major League roster, I think including Carlos Santabria, who was the 11th rookie to make his Major League debut for the Astros last night. There aren't any options, and we've talked about it before. I just don't see the value, unless you really think there's a chance you're winning the World Series, of dealing any of these guys for Major League help this year for a 60-game season that literally could be called any day. Maybe it won't happen. Maybe we do play all 60 games and manage to get the playoffs through, but the odds are still heavily stacked against it, I would think. And so knowing that and knowing all the other GMs know that too, what's the point in dealing any of your future, even if it's a guy that might be a relief pitcher or might be a fifth starter someday, for 30 days worth of help?
Where do you feel your gut? What does your gut tell you about the chance? Like, you know, as a fan, like I watch the Yankees and the Dodgers, and I know that there's that if everything plays out the way it's supposed to be, those are the two best teams in baseball, and it's not close. Where do you feel like the Astros' chances are in the division at this point? Do you think it's Oakland's division to lose?
Well, first of all, I would agree with the Dodgers. I'm going to be the guy, and I'm sure it's trash can and Twitter and everything else. I'm not sold on the Yankees yet because they've played a healthy diet of nobody. The Phillies are really the first team they played with a pulse, and they lost pretty resoundingly to them last night. So yet to be written about the Yankees. Yeah, they're a great team. They've got a great lineup. They have pitching problems like we have pitching problems, except they do have Gerrit Cole and we don't. The Dodgers are, I think, a step above everybody else right now, and they have the depth to withstand David Price sitting out for a year. For us, I'm not ready to throw in the towel on it. We're a game and a half back with still 48 games left to play, 49 games left to play, and 10 of those are against Oakland. So the team that we're chasing right now, we're about to play this weekend, and after those three games, we've got seven more games against them. So certainly not any point in throwing in the towel. And our offense is still one of the best, if not the best, in the major leagues. And our, you know, all of the accused are starting to hit again. Carlos never stopped hitting. Brantley's going to come back from his, I mean, Carlos is legitimately, if he could keep this up, would be an MVP talk.
And throwing the leather around too. He has looked as good at defensive shortstop in the last 3 days as he's ever looked.
Absolutely. And I think he's stepped into a leadership role. Brantley's going to be there. He's a professional hitter. Bregman's starting to come around. Springer's starting to come around. Altuve's still lagging a little bit, but his history suggests he's going to hit. So I'm not worried about us offensively. We could even stand an injury there and not be decimated because Alvarez, in theory, is still coming back to the lineup at some point. Tucker has even looked good so far this year. Where the concern is do we have enough pitching to win the division and then survive? I don't even know if it's 11 games or it's going to end up being 14 or 13 games for a playoff run. Right now, I'd say we don't. I'd say we're going to, the big goal probably is winning the division and seeing what happens in the playoffs because we just don't have the pitching. Zach Greinke is the only thing that's close to reliable so far, and I'm not taking anything away from Christian Javier, but he is a rookie who has appeared in all of three games. Yes, he's been masterful, but at some point somebody's going to open a book on him and we'll see how he adjusts to that. Grinke's got a track record. McCullers has a track record too. It's just not a great one until you get to the playoffs and then all of a sudden he's money. Maybe he needs more pressure. I don't know what his issue is, but it's certainly something between his ears and not something because his fingers are too dry. If that's the case, get some moisturizer, start investing in aloe stocks.
I do think, as we wrap it up, I guess my question is, if you had to put money in Vegas for them to win the division, would you feel like it was a good bet?
What are my odds?
Man, so you got to bring math into it. I don't know how that
538 works. Still says it'd still be a good bet, but if I'm going to make money, yeah, I'd still put money down. Ask me again after this weekend.
How far? So I guess then this is the last question. How far back can they fall behind, playing Oakland this weekend? I mean, because I think the theory is that the Astros have been bit by an injury bug, and some teams haven't, and that eventually works itself out. How you hope it does? How far behind the A's can they fall and still have a realistic chance?
I think you can't. I don't think anybody's going to be able to get more than 3 to 4 games behind anybody else and win a division with a 60 games season, especially knowing that a tenth or 10 of those games for everybody, 12 of those games for everybody's already gone. Time is of the essence. This is not a 160 game season where you could eat a performance like McCullers had last night or two performances like James has had so far. If I can remind Astros fans, Garrett Cole gave up 8 runs in a start last year in May, as I recall, and managed to salvage the season somehow.
I was there.
Through superior talent. But, there is something to be said for shit happens. I think last night was more than just shit happening, though. I think it started off that way, and he kind of threw a match into the gasoline that already happened to be all over the ground. He's got to turn it around and turn it around quickly. The Astros have to figure out how they can get at least 5 innings a night from their starting pitching. Because if they don't, these rookies are going to get exposed. They're going to be out there too much. Any element of surprise they have right now is going to be gone. And it's going to be harder and harder. And you're going to see more games like last night. Maybe we're on the winning end of it even, but 14-7 it's not a football or a baseball score. It is a football score. That's not baseball. And we're contributing to that by not having pitching.
And now the Big League Chew. An eye on the majors. Brought to you by Zoomer Sport.
And we are joined with Scotty Mack on the Big League Chew. And, you and I are going to be together tomorrow, because of the way science works and when this video drops, So we're going to be, you know, O'Fallon together. But I wanted to jump on real quick, man, because if we were to do a word cloud of 2020, Tommy John would be like the fourth or fifth biggest word, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, every year there seems to be more and more. You know, I had a friend about 10 years ago that just said a prerequisite for all pitchers coming out of high school should just be go get Tommy John done so we can get it out of the way.
It seems crazy. Tom Cheston dropped a stat where there's more pitchers on the IL at this point in the season than at any other time in baseball's history. My question for you is, I think we're all smart. We can all see that starting and stopping and then ramping back up for 3 weeks is not good for anyone.
Right.
At some point, did the union just miscalculate how many injuries would be? And as a result of the union's job is to protect its constituents, did they have some sort of complicitness in this?
Yeah, you know, I've thought about this. And so I guess what you don't know, you're really trusting what someone did during the break, right? So you don't know what a pitcher did when he was confined to his home. Did he find a place to throw? Did he not find a place to throw? Was he throwing against a mattress on the wall? I know in the case of Adam Wainwright that he was throwing with KK, our new Korean pitcher. So they developed a friendship. Both of those guys are still healthy, so that may show something. But did people continue to throw, and at what level? And I just, there's no way to know, but you hit the nail on the head. You're starting, you're getting ramped up. You're not quite to that. You're probably at like 70, 80% ready level when they said, okay, we're done now. And then you kind of got to hold that. And you just kind of got to cruise. Your body was never really ready to ramp up, and it's still not ready to ramp up, and they're still not even asking you to fully ramp up, but you took a 3-month, 4-month break from spring training and back at it. I don't know if the union, you know, you're kind of, I don't blame the union for it, Jim, because what previous evidence do they really have to go off of? You're making best guesses and trusting people. And as the Cardinals and Marlins have already shown, you can't trust the players. So
I saw a funny tweet from friend of the show, the Hitter Sports today. And it was the air high five thing for the Marlins after their win. And he said proof of the Marlins for the first time, they followed a COVID protocol.
Yeah, finally. Attaboy. Finally. Surprised they didn't tip each other singles. Somebody makes it rain after a home run.
I'm surprised. Yeah, I agree.
24 innings without allowing a run, though. I mean, usually they're the team that's not scoring a run for 24 innings. So kudos to the Marlins.
It is definitely a topsy-turvy season. And I do want to go back to the union part. And I think maybe complicit is wrong. But maybe this at least says, hey, you know what? You know, those of you who complain spring training's too long, it actually isn't too long. It's exactly what we need.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they've been doing it this way for a long time. And it's not like you're, you know, it's not like the NFL where, oh, well, we're going to play 5 preseason games, which are completely unnecessary because
right.
You've got 90 people to start out this summer camp, and you're going to whittle that down to 45, 53. You know, 30 of those guys aren't going to be there anyway. Why are they even, you know, getting the check for a little while? That's unnecessary. Spring training is actually quite necessary. And also, I mean, who doesn't enjoy going to Florida or Arizona in March? So come on. But no, it's absolutely necessary. It's being proven out that the human body takes a certain amount of time to get to a point to where it can perform at a professional level. And the human body has not had that time this year. And some guys are just doing the best they can and some aren't. You know, in talking about the topsy-turviness, I watched the D-backs and the Astros last night Wednesday night. And Lance McCullers was on the mound. And for 3 innings, I thought his stuff was so incredibly lively. He had wicked two-seam movement. And then they timed him And it got really ugly really quickly. But
We're actually about to do an emergency talk session with Andy after this segment about that. But yeah, there was a lot going on in that. And those of us who've watched Lance know, sometimes Lance can have a 5 cent head, and the inside the park home run was just bad baseball luck. It hit the right.
Oh man, hit the right spot in that weird spot right along the right field corner.
And,
yeah,
and the ball does travel. You know, the story is they opened the roof between those innings, and that was a part of it. And that one golf swing that just I thought was a routine fly ball, and that thing just kept carrying. But he does have a tendency to get very like meltdowny on the mound, and that is what happened. I mean, you had a 4-run cushion. The Astros ended up scoring 3 more. There's no reason they should have lost that game.
Yeah, it was. We could also have a segment on should roofs be allowed to be opened in the middle of a ball game. We could have a segment on that too, if you ask me. The conditions, you know, should conditions be allowed to change, or should it be just fine because the weather changes too? So you should get over it. I don't know, but I think that was the to me that epitomized what this season has been like. Oh, cool, everything's cruising along. No, everything just absolutely went to hell in a handbasket. So
yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that is the season. Real quick, then, just give me your real quick assessment. Should any team feel out of contention at this point?
No, the teams that knew they weren't going to make it anyway and don't have a Cinderella dream right now, but we are 20% of the way finished with the season. I will say this, the teams that are doing well are also the teams that have not had a rash of injuries. The Yankees and the A's stand out to me as the most prominent example of both of those. So, but anybody can be bitten by the injury bug. The Yankees have shown that in years past. Every other team has shown that this year. So I don't think it's safe to believe that your team is you're in and you're coasting, especially with the expanded playoffs and what that's going to look like. Playoffs. But I do want to see a team like the Marlins sneak in. I really do. I really want to see that. I think we deserve that. We need that this year. I need some insanity. The Marlins and the O's in the World Series being the last two teams in either side and then find a way to sneak their way in would completely epitomize everything if we ever get to that World Series point. But the only thing that has been proven this year with Yadi Molina going on the IL with contracting COVID is that Yadier Molina can indeed catch everything.
Show me the merch, the best from the pro shop.
And welcome to Show Me the Merch. It's our look at some of our favorite items from around the world of minor league baseball. And we have two of our favorite teams from affiliated minor league baseball to take a look at. Very excited about some of what we got. So we're going to start with the Lancaster Jethawks. So the Lancaster Jethawks, we've looked at some of their items before. Jess Canaster, who is a good friend of the show and one of our contributors, works for them. And they did a sale of mystery box stuff. And we wanted to support that team. They are on the minor league baseball contraction list. And so we thought it was important to do our best to kind of throw a little extra cash their way, maybe help keep them moving as they work through the pandemic and through the contraction. And so we have some great stuff. And, you know, you basically pay like $75, I think, and you kind of get what you get. And so we're going to start out with their toque for their El Viento look. This is their Copa de la Diversión look. El Viento is Spanish for wind. And so I'll definitely will wear the toque, and I hope all my Canadian friends realize that I am saying that word correctly. They also got a really cool dad hat. I just kind of love the look, and I think them and the Wind Surge should absolutely have to play a rivalry game. I thought this was a nice touch, including their Michelada glass for their Copa weekend. And then the piece de resistance, one of the favorite bobbleheads that I now own. It's got a very Deus de los Muertos look. It's just an elegant design, and I cannot wait to get it up on the shelf. Now, they also included some items from their traditional Lancaster Jethawks look. We got the Wordmark bob cap that I'll absolutely get out on the shelf pretty soon. And then this.
immediately one of my favorite bobbleheads, period. It was for their aerospace weekend. The Air Force Base is a big part of life out there. And it's why I think this team is so important and needs to be saved, because military guys need to feel some connection to home. What better way to do that through baseball? So I absolutely love the bobblehead. And then I'm the guy who buys toys or whatever. I take them out of the package. I want you to look at them and feel them and touch them. Look at, you know, all around you, all around me. But I'm going to save the box because big Top Gun fan, and this whole Jethawks and Top Gun wordmark is absolutely awesome. So that's our cool stuff from the Lancaster Jethawks. Now we're going to go back to one of our old standbys, one of our favorite brands in baseball, the Corpus Christi Hooks. And we're going to start with their faux back flex fit, which is going to become one of my to-go caps for sure, or go-to caps, I should say. And I just, again, I can't say enough how much I love the faux back Corpus Christi Hook look. The very 70s-ish color scheme, just a great, great look. Now, they also did one of their Boy Isn't 2020 Awful shirts. And what I love about it is it says the one that got away. And to me, that's clever. It's a very dry wit. It really ties into their brand, whereas some of these shirts have honestly been a bit of a reach. But this really ties the brand together. It's a lame Big Lebowski reference. And I love the fact that they put 0-0 on the back. So again, another win from the Corpus Christi Hooks. Mazel tov, and congratulations to them for the fact that they seem to keep coming up with stuff for me to buy. And I would have thought that would have been impossible.
Who's on first? The Let's Get To Local 9. Brought to you by Zoomer Sport.
So we are excited to welcome to Let's Get To the general manager of the O'Fallon Hoots, David Schmall. How you doing, David?
I'm wonderful, James. How are you?
You know what? We are doing great. It's 103 degrees, so I'm going to be coming up to see you guys this weekend, and I'm looking forward to it. It'll be a little bit cooler.
Yeah, it was like 72 earlier this week. It's been nuts.
I'm jealous. I've been watching it, watching the weather nonstop. So tell me a little about yourself, man. How did you get like interested in baseball, like even as a kid? Who did you root for? How'd you end up being a GM of a baseball team?
Yeah, so obviously growing up in St. Louis, you're a Cardinals fan through and through. So I grew up a Cardinals fan. I played baseball as a kid growing up here in the St. Louis area. And then as time went on and I went into the sports industry, I actually started off in hockey and worked in hockey for 6 years in Northwest Mississippi for the Mississippi River Kings. Oh, wow. I was in single A hockey there, started off in radio, and then moved into a management position, after I'd been there for a few years. And when the opportunity came up to be able to move home, to me, it really doesn't matter what the sport is. It's really all about the entertainment and what kind of entertainment you can provide and the ability to bring people together and enjoy something. And so obviously played baseball and loved the game. And so when the opportunity came to move home, basically, it was a no brainer. And so we were the River City Rascals at the time, and was then fortunate enough to be able to come over with the Hoots when the O'Fallon Hoots came to be. There you go. That's one of my favorite hats. Hats that we got.
Well, the guy who did the show with me surprised me at our film festival with an entire jersey awesome. And hat. Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
So when everything went down last year and the Hoots came in, I was very fortunate to be able to stay on and really get this thing going. And what a first year it's been.
So let's before we get into the longest eight month period of the year so far. But what was that transition like for you to go from independent Frontier League to now Collegiate Summer League? How did that change your job at all?
It really didn't change it a whole lot. I was very fortunate to be able to have an ownership group that really worked with us as we went through that transition, you know, basically play off what our strengths are. I'm more on the business side of things. I can watch a baseball game and be like, yeah, you know, that guy's pretty good or that guy's not so great, but I'm not going to be able to go out and recruit players. I'm not going to be able to have that kind of an eye for talent. So when we were putting together what our staff was going to look like, you know, we had Joe Lincoln, our manager for the Hoots, who's still managing in the Cartersfield Collegiate League. He handled all the baseball ops stuff. And so my focus was just making sure that, you know, year one, when we roll around, the business side was in good shape. And so obviously, the world had other options, or other ideas on what was going to happen for our first season. And, but no, I mean the transition from a baseball standpoint was let's take a look at the things that, were going well for us, because we were having some decent years, my 2 years here in O'Fallon with the Rascals. Let's take those things that worked really well, continue those. But now's a really great opportunity to have a clean break from some of the stuff that we were doing that, you know, maybe we thought we couldn't make the change because of the name. That gave us just an opportunity to clean slate, start over, right, get rid of the things we didn't like, start doing things that we did, and really develop a for the fan kind of mentality. And we've been able to do that to an extent. And really, obviously, as we're 2 weeks-ish away from the end of the CCL, looking ahead to what next year looks like and really continuing to just build on those successes.
Let's talk about that for a second then. You know, you talk about 2020. You know, you grew up a St. Louis kid. I grew up I'm a Houston kid. So I was always dreaming of going into spring training. I had tickets this year. We were supposed to fly out the 5th, and it happened. It was my birthday. It was the whole thing. So now we're dealing with 2020. We don't know what baseball is going to happen. What prompted the decision for you guys to basically form your own little pod league as opposed to just saying no baseball for the summer?
Right. You know, it was really a conversation with a couple members of our ownership group, who also have some stake in Normal. We were talking together and they were like, have you thought about doing this? This is what we're thinking about doing in Normal. Have you guys thought about doing this there? And I was like, that's a lot better of an idea than anything else that we were talking about. And, you know, it was an opportunity to basically put together the same amount of games ish as we were going to end up playing in a condensed prospect league for each one of the teams. Now, obviously, it came out to 90 games in 45 days for us here in O'Fallon as we added 16. We had 6 teams in our league. Originally, we were going to have 4. But after about 72 hours, we had about 96 kids signed up to play. And Joe's calling me saying, what do you think? And, you know, to our credit, we've done a really great job here in St. Charles County of renting out our facility to youth teams, soccer teams, to get practices in, to get some games in. And I was like, I don't even know if we have any field time. So we're going through until like earlier in the week where we played doubleheaders Monday and Tuesday morning. I mean, we're playing games at, you know, sometimes 10 o'clock in the morning, 11 o'clock, and then we'll spin back around at 5:30 and play night game doubleheaders. So it was really those conversations of, you know, hey, I think this would be a great idea for you guys to do there. Awesome. I'm going to have, you know, Joe's going to go out and he's going to recruit players. I'm going to make sure that our ticketing and our sponsors and all that sort of stuff is set on our end. So again, it was just really playing to the strengths of the people that we had. And it really, so far, knock on wood, we still have some time, but it's been really successful for us, and it's been good baseball. I mean, you mentioned earlier going from independent ball to summer college ball. You have some of these kids that are coming in throwing harder than we saw in indie ball. It's been pretty incredible to watch it. You know, for me, I hadn't watched a whole lot of college baseball growing up, or even, you know, after I graduated college. So it's been really, really great to watch these kids play.
One of the things I found interesting and wanted you to speak on is it does seem like the pod systems worked, right? We've seen Major League Baseball, it's running rampant. There's been a couple of other collegiate leagues that had some travel and they're getting infections, but it seems like you guys, the KCL, we've been out to Bismarck with those guys. We've been, Sugarland has, it seems like that's the solution, is to stay there.
Right. And I think, you know, there's a couple of reasons for that. I think one is, you know, you're not using the locker rooms. So you're limiting the time spent where you are really, really close together. From having been a broadcaster and having been on the road and been in locker rooms and all that stuff, I mean, you're sitting in the locker room for sometimes hours on end. I mean, you get to the ballpark, or for me, it was getting to the rink, and you're sitting there in the locker room and you're just hanging out, waiting for the game to start. That's not socially distant. You know, from our standpoint, you eliminate that. Everybody's wearing masks. You're screening everybody as they're coming in. And then when folks have had contact with somebody outside who has had anything going on or symptoms or anything, boom, go out, get tested, don't come back until, you know, you can come back with a negative test. And, you know, we've just been really sticking to those protocols and making sure that we're being responsible. We said it from the very, very beginning. We want to be able to provide something for the community. We want to be able to provide something for the players to have a safe and responsible way to play baseball. And really, you know, like you mentioned, that the pod system, it's the only thing to me that made sense. You get guys on a bus again, that's another, you're in there for, you know, 2, 3, 4 hours, depending on how far you're going. Even if you have people spaced out, I mean, you're still in an enclosed space.
Right.
And so to eliminate all of those high, you know, touch point or high risk situations and really have the only time where you're going to be really, really tight together is in the dugout, where we require the players to wear masks and distance themselves as best as possible. It's the most responsible way to go about putting it together. And I'm not surprised that the pods have been the ones that have been the most successful.
Let's talk a little bit about why it matters, right? Like, I think we all can assume that, you know, the O'Fallon Hoots and the Sugarland Skeeters and the Macon Bacon, the hat I'm wearing right now, like, you guys don't have TV deals. So we all understand, right, you have to play to make some revenue to stay afloat. Mm-hmm. Why is it important to the players? And why is it important to fans for us to have baseball right now?
I think it's important just to have some kind of outlet to be able to rally around something. I think that, you know, having some sort of a sense of community, and that's one thing that, you know, this whole situation has really pushed, is driving people apart. And if we can find a safe and responsible way to bring people together, I mean, we have our seating area in our seating bowl. We have two rows of separation between seats. We had a game the other night. We had close to 1,000 people. Our ballpark fire code is right around 5,000, and everybody was distant. I mean, it was one of the first games, and it was one of our most crowded, where we didn't actually have to go through and be like, hey, you guys can't cross the chain. And we like to have fun with it too. Like, I walk through the crowd. We had a line going to walk in, and I'm going through the whole rules of why we check bags and all that sort of stuff. And I say, hey, when you go into the seating bowl, if you find yourself having to cross a chain or cross caution tape, you have done something wrong. And, you know, just have a lighthearted way to go about doing that. But, you know, to go back to your question, it really, for the community, it's to give them something to rally around and be able to go out and enjoy yourself and enjoy family and enjoy company, but in a safe and distant way. For the players, I mean, these are guys that lost their seasons. They lost, at one point they lose their college season. Then everybody's prepping for summer ball because everybody's like, you know, we're going to be able to still play summer ball. It's going to be delayed, but we'll still be able to play. And then that gets canned. And then, you know, we saw an opportunity to be able to provide something for players, fans, sponsors, anybody that wants to be able to engage, wants to get together. And again, I cannot stress enough to do it in a safe and responsible way. We had the opportunity to do that. And like I said, I think we've been pretty successful with it.
One of the things that I've noticed following you guys from afar is you guys are still also doing some of the fun stuff. Like, I bid on and won the Star Wars jersey. Can't wait. I got the Corn Belters one too from their league. I might switch them out.
Ours looks nicer. you know?
Okay, David, I know that you're the guest, but you mix that Astros 70s look with a tie with the next wing and I'm in. So
I forgot that I missed that. I missed on
yeah, that. Yeah, that was it. But no, you guys are still doing your best to keep it up. And so I'm going to be out there tomorrow night. Scott McIntyre's coming with me. What can I expect as a fan? How are you making me feel safe? But what can I expect as far as the atmosphere?
Yeah, so so you're actually going to be out on another specialty jersey night. So hope you got.
I'll tell my wife.
Yeah. Oh, silence. Silence. It's our superhero princess night. So we will have our team's going to be wearing Hulk inspired jerseys. So they're going to look. They look really, really nice. So we'll be donating to a charity of Alliance Credit Union's choice after that game. The profits from that jersey auction. We're going to have character appearances down in our picnic pavilion area. Fans will be able to take pictures with them from a distance to make sure that we're being socially distant. Our staff is all wearing masks when we can't socially distance. So if you're in conversation with one of us, we've got our masks on. We encourage everybody else to do the same, although it's not required. I've been very impressed with how many folks have, even though we're not requiring it, are still wearing their masks inside of the ballpark. They get to their seats, they get distant, they get separated into their family group, then they might take their mask off to hang out with their family. But it's being outside and being distant from everybody and being able to kick back, have a beer if you choose to have one, and sit back and watch some baseball.
All right, last question. So I got to imagine y'all have learned you're going to take something positive from this.
Oh, yeah. It's all part of the story, man. It's all part of the story.
You're exactly right. What do you think you'll take into 2021, the lesson you learned from this year?
I think it's being fluid. I think that's when we talked with the staff on the first day of after our staff meeting of being back in the office, it was looking like the Prospect League wasn't going to happen. And we were going to be transitioning into this new league. I told everybody, we've got to be fluid. What happens on day one may not be the same thing that happens on day two. And that same thing may change day three and day four and day five. And I think we've really learned as a staff how to adapt, how to step into other people's roles, and take on their roles because they might have been pulled to do something else, or their job might have changed in a slight way or in a drastic way. And it's just being able to adapt and to be fluid and to be able to rely on each other. I know for me, it was having to just take a step back and say, okay, I can't have my hand in everything. I'm going to have to trust that concessions is taken care of. I'm going to have to trust that tickets is taken care of. That has been a huge learning thing for me. But as an organization, it's the ability to adapt to change and being fluid through this whole process because, unfortunately, there's a chance that this thing could be hanging around into 2021. And
David, don't do that to me.
I know. I hate it. I hate it. But the ability to adapt to change and to be fluid and be resilient and creative and come up with new ways to stay relevant. That's what I've taken from it. I think organizationally we've all learned from that as well.
Now on to close it out, the right-hander from Houston, Texas, James Christopher.
You know, we did a lot of talking about Major League Baseball today and just how odd this season has been, the injuries, COVID, the idea that teams are going to just essentially get into the playoff seeding based on win percentage, even if they play a dramatically fewer amount of games. Which seems so counterintuitive. I do hope that Major League Baseball learns from the mistake they made and at least when it's playoff time, decides to play in a pod. I think you have to do a bubble for the playoffs, though. I think you have to figure out a way to make sure that if we get to the playoffs, that those playoffs finish. You know, I think it's one thing that
if Major League Baseball came out in September and they said, we're going to finish the season, but there'll be no playoffs. I think people will be really bummed, but I do think that they're still going to look at 30 days or 30 games worth of entertainment. If you get to the playoffs and then you are not able to finish them, that will be devastating to your game. There's no way around it. So hopefully Major League Baseball has learned from the colossal amount of mistakes that they've made. They look around and they see that pods work, traveling doesn't, and they find a way to bubble up the playoffs. Like I said, though, we have some really good episodes coming from you next week. We're going to be talking to the Portland Pickles. We're going to be visiting the O'Fallon Hoots. And then a week after that, we're going to be celebrating our 100th episode. So thanks for stopping in. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for letting us entertain you a little bit with some baseball talk. And until next time, let's get to it.